Welcome. My name is Joe Bushes, and I'm a certified clinical nutritionist and a licensed dietitian nutritionist, host of the Tuesday Minute, and a clinician for over 30 years. And I'm joined with Dr. Greg Peterson, who's a diplomat in internal medicine and certified in acupuncture and spinal trauma. He's also been a clinician for over 27 years and an adjunct professor at Northwestern Health University, teaching post-graduate courses in the clinical use of the laboratory. And today we're going to talk about digestion, the place to achieve total wellness. People can really never be healthy if they don't have adequate digestive system. Their digestive system is not adequate. And so the question that we want to consider is are your patients suffering from digestive issues? And our premise today is if they're not suffering from it now, they will be, because we're exposed to so much fake food, so much stress. We'll talk about that in a minute. But before we do that, I just wanted to share just a quick clinical case study. I had a patient probably now about 10 years ago, and that particular patient had been all over. They'd seen all the top medical doctors in the Chicagoland area, and boy, they had a comprehensive stool digestive analysis, and they had amino acid testing and mineral testing and hormone testing. As a clinical nutritionist, I was just salivating at all these tests. I go, oh, you need this, and oh, you need this, and oh, you need this. And it's like I put together these probably 8 different products that they needed. And I was so confident when they left. And we spent about an hour going over their diet. And I was so confident that they were going to come back feeling like $1 million. And the way I see patients is I see them once a month, and they come back and a month later and go, how are you doing? I was just actually excited to see them, knowing that they were going to feel tremendously better. And they go, I don't feel any better, maybe even a little worse. I go, no way, you can't. And so lo and behold, I didn't address digestion. And so when I put them on the examination table that we use, had them bend their knees and check the different areas that we're going to be sharing with you, I realized that they had a severe stomach issue, hydrochloric acid, and were pancreatic as well. And so I took about a month and just spent time healing the stomach and then put them back on the same nutrients, and they did remarkably well. So I guess the main message I'm sharing with you is the sicker the patient, the more they're going to have digestive issues. So are your patients suffering from digestive issues? Let's consider this. We eat too fast. We eat synthetic foods. We eat while we're under stress. We drink liquids that dilute our digestive juices. By the way, that eating under stress, you remember from your physiology that when you're eating under stress, you're under your sympathetic nervous system. What's the system that helps with digesting our food? That's exactly right, the parasympathetic system. So if we're eating all stressed out, we're not digesting the proper juices that we need to digest our food, then when we drink liquids, we dilute it even further. We also eat foods that cause inflammation, and that sometimes that's just food that's not real, and sometimes it's foods that we're sensitive to, dairy and gluten and all kinds of other things. We also eat foods that starve the healthy bacteria. Dr. Alex Vasquez made a profound statement which just still rings true in my ears, and he said that we used to think that we eat good food so that we have the right calories and the right vitamins and minerals, but now we realize, based on the new research, that we're eating the right foods to feed the bacteria that in our gut, which will naturally reduce inflammation and turn on and turn off cytokines. So food is very important. We also eat food from other countries, and we're exposed to parasites, and those can cause dysbiosis. So are your patients suffering from digestive issues? If not now, they will be soon. And Dr. Peterson, do you want to jump in?
I will, Joe. Thank you. And I just want to reiterate what you said, Joe, about the importance of the digestive system. I remember, denial isn't going to help us, Joe, but we've got almost 60 years of clinical experience. So hopefully we can help some people save some of the pitfalls and learning curve that we had to do. But I couldn't believe the nutrition approach to the body. And it always seemed so anal to me. It was always, take care of the digestive. And like you, I wanted to jump right in because I had put together a perfect protocol. But until we address the digestive system, we're gonna experience failure in a great number of our cases, and we'll sure experience a great deal of success if we do take the time to address it. So the things that we've got to help practitioners with today, I hope they'll take note and save some of the time that you and I did not. But with that, you know, the number two class of over-the-counter drugs are digestive supplements, whether they're antacids or whether they're digestive enzymes. It's the number two class of over-the-counter drugs. So digestive is huge. Like you said, if it's not now, it's going to be. The drugs were meant to be used for short periods. The prescription drugs, the proton pump inhibitors, were only approved for use for 14-day intervals. Now, I know in my clinical experience, I have not heard too many patients come in and tell me that their medical practitioner had put them on for just 2 weeks. Usually they're convinced that it's going to be a lifetime of that, and God forbid they ever try to stop, because they're going to go back to the suffering that they experienced before. Even babies who are suffering colic are being given reflux meds these days. And what I find to be highly successful, Joe, is I'll have mothers who are nursing express a little bit of breast milk, add an Intenzyme Forte or a bromelain plus CLA, digested in a little stopper bottle with an eyedropper, and have them drip a little bit of that enzyme and mother's milk as the baby nurses. Just drip it right down the breast into the mouth, or put a little bit into the bottle, or add it to it, because it could curdle the milk if it sits too long. It will curdle the milk, but that's why I like to drip it down the nipple or drip it down the breast, and it will really help with babies who are experiencing reflux problems. So what happens if we suppress hydrochloric acid?
Well, one of the things that we need for proper levels of hydrochloric acid is to kill the bacteria in our food. I've heard many biologists say that if we could see all the bacteria in our food, we probably wouldn't eat it. And it's interesting that, you know, two people can eat the same food, and some people will get deathly sick. One person will get deathly sick, and the other person won't be sick at all, and that's because of the amount of hydrochloric acid that a person secretes in their stomach. They won't. They can kill that those pathogens. So we also need to initiate the process of protein digestion, and we need proteins for all sorts of repair. We need it for hormones. We need it for healthy hair, healthy nails. We need proper levels of hydrochloric acid for mineral absorption, specifically iron and calcium, magnesium and zinc. We also need healthy levels of hydrochloric acid for B12 absorption. So if we're low in hydrochloric acid, we're not going to absorb our B12 properly. We know that's needed for so many different things. We also need hydrochloric acid because unless we have the right pH, the body will not release secretin. Now, secretin it is a hormone that turns on the pancreatic enzymes. We also need the correct pH for cholecystokinin, which is necessary for healthy bile. So if we're taking these proton pump inhibitors, if we're taking all these antacids and the pH is rising, we know in the stomach it should be about 1.5, no more than 3. If it's rising too high, then we're not going to turn on the pancreatic enzymes and the healthy bile, so we won't digest our fats and our carbohydrates. And what happens if you have undigested fats and proteins? Then we just get the rancidifying factor causing gas, et cetera. So for more information on why we need hydrochloric acid or stomach acid, Dr. Jonathan Wright wrote a book called Why We Need Stomach Acid. So I'd encourage you to take a look at that book.
Joe, I'd like to just expound upon that about the importance of the pH in the gut. I recently had a patient come in the last 2 weeks who had prostatic adenocarcinoma, and he had chosen not to go the medical route, and he was so proud because he had his urine pH almost alkaline, which is a good thing. But when I checked his salivary pH and I looked at his bicarbonate or CO2 in his blood, he was still very acid. And as I tried to explain to him, and a concept we have to understand is that, you know, we have to consider what fluid are we looking at. Saliva should be a little, you know, definitely more alkaline. Urine should be approaching alkaline, and the blood wants to be alkaline. It wants to be 7.35 to 7.45. So it's very important, and it all hinges upon the gut as being the area that's going to act as the fulcrum for this teeter-totter. So pH is vitally important, and the gut plays a vital role in this. But where do we start, you know, with the digestion? All the new research points to the gut, but true digestion starts in the mouth. What I mean by that is it starts with the chewing of the food. We want to take the time to slow down and eat our food. As you had mentioned earlier, we eat too quick, we don't chew our food, we're under stress, and many times we're doing it all at once by going through the drive-thru window while we're talking on our cell phones and trying to choke down a fast food meal. We have to make sure we chew our food. We want to make sure, and the way I remember it is we chew our liquids and drink our solids. In other words, we chew, making sure that we get that food chewed up, because it's going to be so important. And that when people chew their food to a liquid, it will help to stimulate those digestive enzymes. It's like a car wash, that as it moves from one step from the mouth down into the stomach, into the duodenum, and further, each step has to be completed to the optimum in order to stimulate the next step. So by encouraging eating mindfulness, taste and enjoy the food, carpe diem, seize the moment, slow down, take the time to focus on that food, not in a love affair type of way, that can lead to other issues. But to enjoy the food, enjoy the taste of that food, enjoy the textures of the food, enjoy the smells that go with it, enjoy the company that you're with. But eating mindfully is so important to setting up the whole digestive tract, to switch from that sympathetic go, type A type of person into the parasympathetic, or that rest and digest mode. So when we're treating the bowel, always think north to south. In other words, if we're looking at a lower bowel issue, think small bowel issues, start thinking pancreatic enzymes, and just keep moving up towards digestion. Are they really chewing their food? Because you'll be amazed that when you ask, they'll say yes, but then ask the spouse, because they'll say, you don't chew your food, you swallow it whole. And I've heard that more than on one occasion.
Well, I know we're going to talk specifically about the different digestive organs, but and one of the things that we're going to teach is a concept called neurolingual taste testing, and we're going to find different points that when they're tender, we're going to have patients taste different nutrients to see what reduces that tenderness in those points. And I am always amazed that when I'm working with the bowel area, that I'll have them taste the hydrochloric acid supplement, talking about your example from north to south. The stomach is obviously north of the bowel. I'll taste the hydrochloric acid, and all of a sudden the gut clears up. So it really is very, very important. Well, let's look at the ways we can assess digestive wellness, because that's we're looking for clinical pearls in this particular webinar, what we can do. So here's the ways that you can tell if a person has digestive issues, or if they're experiencing digestive wellness. First of all, their symptoms. We've got actually a sheet that will be attached that you can click on, that you can get a symptom survey form. But symptoms are very important. One of the people that we're going to be spending some time with studying their work is Dr. Harry Eidenier, and he worked on over 10,000 different patients using Heidelberg instrument. And the Heidelberg, basically you swallow a capsule and then there's a radio wave that goes off, and you can measure the pH of the stomach, and then you challenge the stomach and you can see what happens, how the pH changes. And so it's a very expensive equipment, but it's very unique. That's something that Dr. Jonathan Wright uses very extensively as well. So the symptoms, but one of the things that he found is that after using blood tests, Heidelberg equipment, a variety of other things, that the symptoms were probably just as important, if not more important, than the testing. So we'll come back to the symptoms again. Blood tests, we'll talk about those in a little bit more detail, the two major ones being total globulin and serum gastrin. CSDA stands for comprehensive stool digestive analysis, and that's something that other doctors, other laboratories sometimes call by different things, but the one that I've used most is called comprehensive stool digestive analysis. And what they'll do is look for undigested food. And again, it's a little on the expensive side. It's about $350 per test. Now, muscle testing is another way to assess for digestive health, but it's a little subjective. And some people don't like the subjectivity. They want something a little more concrete. What we're going to talk about today is we're going to talk about physical palpation of different reflexes and different points, some of which are the Chapman reflexes, and then we're going to go into detail with using another type of urine test called a urinary indican test, and we're going to talk about some very precise measurements for that. You want to go into the symptoms, Dr. Peterson?
I do, Joe. Thank you. And some of the other symptoms that are very important, because so often it's you have to just treat from some of the subjectivity because you won't always get the objectivity. And as Joe pointed out, with the CSDA or the CDSA, depending upon the lab, you know, we want to use some of the other things. And you certainly will not hurt a patient by treating the bowel. Look how many advertisements there are now for probiotics. You know, it's kind of interesting. In the old physician's desk reference, it used to state anytime you give an antibiotic, to give a probiotic. But just giving a probiotic now, once the bowel is ill, isn't going to take care of it. You have to go in just like a lawn. You have to pull the weeds before you can fertilize and expect just the grass. But some of the things that are going to be indicative of a real imbalance between the good and the bad bacteria is going to be really foul breath. And you'll note this. This is really foul. This isn't coffee breath. This isn't what you know, they may have eaten for their lunch. This is a real putrid-smelling breath, and that is a very strong indicator. They're just not digesting their foods. It's putrefying. It's rancidifying. I mean, those sound gross in of their own, but what happens is if the body is not breaking down these foods, you're going to be able to pick it up. They may have excessive body odor. I know one of the key ones is stinky feet. You know, if their feet really smell, that every time they take their shoes off, you have to clear the area for a very wide range, start thinking digestive enzymes to help break down some of that protein. A loss of taste for high-protein foods. You know, some will state that this is a lack of hydrochloric acid, and I have found it to be very true in my own practice, that if they've lost the taste for eating protein-rich foods, typically, it's going to be a zinc deficiency, but zinc plays a huge role in the body's ability to manufacture hydrochloric acid. So they go hand in foot, hand in glove. It's just you've got to take a look at. I don't really like protein foods. You know, I'd rather eat my vegetables. Well, I'll start thinking that maybe digestive enzymes might help. Burning or acid stomach that is achieved or relieved, excuse me, by eating. Here you're going to start thinking digestive enzymes again, that as soon as they eat, that burning sensation is relieved. Gas or burping shortly after a meal. What will happen is they'll eat a meal, and within a half hour, they're going to note that they're belching, that you know, they just have to kind of politely try to belch. And this is, again, an indication could be that they're not chewing the food adequately, but also start thinking digestive enzymes because typically, the food is going to stay in the gastric fundus or the stomach approximately 2 hours. So it's going to happen within a relatively short period of time. But indigestion that can last up to 4 hours because sometimes the empty of the gastric fundus is going to be slow if the pH isn't adequate. Remember that car wash, that the pH of the stomach has to be adequate in order to get the next stage to occur. If they have difficulty digesting their fruits or vegetables, often they'll see undigested food in their stools. Here's an opportunity to get a living tissue specimen, you know, looking at the stool by looking at the color. And Joe and I have both done various presentations on the stool and what's important that you can look in the archives here on metabolic management into what might that mean. And I don't want to go into it now, but looking at undigested food matter in their stool is a definite indication that they may need digestive enzymes. What about corn? No. Cellulose that might be in corn, yes. Even with digestive enzymes, they may have an issue there. So sometimes I'm asked that question. Acid or spicy foods that upset the stomach. This can also be an indication of a hyper or an overactive sympathetic nervous system. But start thinking digestive enzymes. That if acid or spicy foods upset their stomach, there may be a real need for digestive enzymes here.
One of the things that the purpose really of this webinar is to find ways to segue your patients, your pain patients, into wellness. And so the easiest way to get a person into wellness is to find the things that are wrong with them and then give them opportunities to fix them. And once they understand that you can fix that, and you become less of a just a pain doctor and more of a wellness doctor. And that's really what our goal is, to assist you to deal with patients and from a wellness paradigm as opposed to just a sickness or disease paradigm. So let's review the basics, because if you don't have the basics, we're not, the digestive enzymes and are not going to be enough. So first thing we want to do is increase water. We need water to digest food. So it's essential that we get people to drink. And you hear different things. I generally like to take their weight and divide it in two, and that's how many ounces of water a person should drink a day. Some people like to drink a quart every 50 pounds. But water is very, very important to make sure that they have the not only to be able to the enzymes necessary, but also the mucus that protects the lining of the stomach is very hydrophilic. And so if we don't have enough water, those mucus cells are going to be very thin, and actually the stomach acid could burn the sides of a person's stomach. So I know from very personal experiences with my daughter having issues with stomach aches, one of the big keys was she wasn't drinking enough water. And after seeing 7 or 8 chiropractic visits, she started drinking water, and all of a sudden her stomach aches went away, which is kind of mind-blowing from my perspective. Again, the mindful eating. You know, so many people eat watching television. They're not even chewing their food properly. They're inhaling their food. They're washing down. So mindful eating. Simple food combining. Dr. Goodhart found many years ago mixing carbohydrates with proteins is a problem. Also, Dr. Bill Ellis, who was an osteopath, found the same thing. And so the sicker the person, when we're young, we can pretty much eat whatever we want because we've got ample enzymes. But as we get older, that's not the case anymore. And so we don't want to mix a steak and a baked potato, for example, with someone with a compromised digestive system. The more we can separate, we would have high proteins, vegetables, and a small amount of carbohydrate. Or if you have a taste for a carbohydrate meal, the carbohydrates, vegetables, and a very small amount of protein, where the protein would be more of a condiment. Avoid all GMO foods. A lot of people don't realize that we're actually injecting viruses. We're using the virus as a container to carry the DNA into the food. And so for many years, we had this pesticide called BT, and what it would do is the bugs would eat the corn that had the BT on it, and what it would do is make the stomachs of the bugs explode. And so now they've taken the BT and they've injected via virus into the corn itself, and so now if the bug eats the corn, their stomachs explode. Well, what happens when we eat the corn? And so that's something we want to try to avoid, as many GMO foods as possible. And as the more GMO foods you see, the harder it becomes. But the sicker the person, the more that they have to comply with that. We're going to suggest step one of the 3-step detox diet. It uses an anti-inflammatory diet. It reduces the major allergens. It's a great place to start. And there'll be a link on this webinar where you can download that diet. But I can't tell you how many people their pain has been alleviated, their stomach pain has been alleviated when they've gone on that diet. Also, we want to talk about food sensitivities. They could be the underlying factor, especially if everything we discussed doesn't reduce after 60 days. Everything that we suggest that you do, you should see major improvements in a week. But if after 60 days they're still not significantly better, then we need to do some food allergy testing, because that could be a major issue. Let's take a look at some blood tests to assess hydrochloric acid deficiencies. The following optimal ranges. Did you want to say something, Dr. Peterson?
Joe, I was going to jump in on the water. Every once in a while, I'll hear a practitioner say, well, you know, coffee and pop or soda are made with water. Water's water, right? Well, Joe, I know what I do. Coffee is one of the things I enjoy. I enjoy a good cup of organic coffee. And for every cup of coffee I drink, I try to drink double that amount in water, because water is not water if it's in coffee or, you know, other diuretic type of beverages. And so I just wanted to drop in with that, because every once in a while you'll hear it said that, well, water's water. It doesn't matter if it's in coffee, tea, or pop. And that's just not true. Maybe an herbal tea is not going to have a negative effect upon the body, but drinking diuretics like that are going to increase the need for more water, Joe.
That's true. That's very true. The following optimal ranges were performed by a balancing body chemistry group on over 10,000 patients between 1980 and the present using what's called a biochemical biopsy, and that included some of the following: electrophoretic methods, and that takes protein electrophoresis, lactate dehydrogenase electrophoresis, alkaline phosphatase electrophoresis, and things like SGOT and SGPT electrophoresis, and hormonal studies, standard blood, hair analysis, symptom histories, urine analysis, and stool analysis. So we'll give you some ranges and some optimum ranges to look at, but I also wanted to mention that blood chemistry is a tool and it shouldn't be used as the exclusive form of diagnosis, but if they're having the symptoms and they have the blood chemistry as well, you can see that that one and one makes two, and that would be a useful way to diagnose some of these conditions. Here are some of the things. Serum globulin, the optimal should be between 2.4 and 2.7. Numbers below 2.4 or above 2.7 with the subjective indications or the subjective symptoms such as loss of a taste for meat, gas, bloating, bad breath should be strongly considered for hydrochloric acid replacement. Serum gastrin under 45. Serum gastrin is used for as an indication of hypochlorhydria. Dr. Eidner and his colleagues found that the upper levels of serum gastrin were used between 100 and 150 were possible gastric ulcers. Over 150 were peptic ulcers. Over 200 was Zollinger-Ellison syndrome. And you've got some experience with that, haven't you, Dr. Peterson?
I do, you know, and Joe, that's why I want to, you know, make sure we make it clear that we're looking at low gastrin levels as hypochlorhydria, and the higher the number, and especially with Zollinger-Ellison, what that is there's tumors that are growing in the stomach, sometimes the pancreas, affects men about 20%, but what it is these are gastrin secreting tumors, and the medical approach is to help decrease the secretion of the gastrin and deal with healing the gut. So many times we might be able to help them. Now I remember hearing years ago that a true hyperchlorhydria or a problem with the having too much stomach acid was a pituitary issue. And when I treated with Cytozyme PT-HPT, there's so few out there that are true hyperchlorhydria, but it would relieve it. Now, was I catching an early sign of the Zollinger-Ellison? I don't know. But I've had patients diagnosed with it and take much the same approach as they do not want to take it. And we've been able to treat them successfully or keep it at bay or in remission as long as we take care of trying to reduce the amount of gastrin that's being reduced or released and help to heal the inflammation in the gut.
So if you see the serum globulin, under 2.4 or over 2.7, think hydrochloric acid deficiency. If you see the serum gastrin, that's about a $40 test, so you might not do that on a standard basis, but if you want further indications, that might be something to consider. Here's some other indicators, blood tests to assess for hydrochloric acid deficiencies. Again, what you're going to note is that not all of them are going to be low or high, but the more that are, the bigger, the greater the need. So if you see a serum phosphorus below 3.0, if you see a MCV over 90, if you see an MCH sometimes over 31.9, if you see a BUN, blood urine nitrogen, over 15, if you see serum calcium's low, the optimum level for calcium is 9.4, iron is over 50, magnesium over 2.0. But if you see, these can be normal or they can be on the decreased side. But if you see all three of them on the decreased side, again, you need hydrochloric acid to cleave the minerals from their substrate. So those can be low. Carbon dioxide, if it's decreased under 26, or alkaline phosphatase, which is a zinc-dependent enzyme, if it's decreased under 60. A couple other indicators, chloride, if it's decreased under 100. And again, you're not going to see all of these, but these are just some indicators. An anion gap that's increased over 12. Now, an anion gap over 12 is an indication of a need for thiamin, B1. And you need B1 and you need zinc to make hydrochloric acid. And the way that you calculate an ion gap is by adding sodium potassium together and then subtracting the total of chloride and CO2. So if that's over 12, when you add the sodium and potassium together, that's one number. The chloride and the CO2 together, another number. Subtract the chloride and the CO2 from sodium and potassium. If that number is over 12, think a need for thiamine. And that's a particularly key for people with diabetes. We really see a lot of people with diabetes, their Krebs cycles are not working properly, and they're not burning their sugars, and their sugars start going up. So that's a big thing to look for. Some of the other indicators for digestive issues are Chapman's reflexes.
And Joe, I'm going to drop back to something you said here. You just finished up with thiamine there, and I had mentioned zinc. Those two are vitally important for the formation of hydrochloric acid. Hydrogen's everywhere. Chloride's going to be there. But in order to get the body to produce the hydrochloric acid, it's a very energy requiring step. And that's where thiamine or B1 comes in, and zinc is also. And the other thing you had mentioned was the calcium low, the iron low, and the magnesium low. What's important about calcium and iron is that they need a very acidic environment in order to be absorbed. I recently had a nurse practitioner call me, and they were dealing with a patient who had bariatric surgery, and we're going to see more and more of that because that's being approved as a medical treatment for obesity. They could not get the anemia taken care of. The hemoglobin was so low. And one of the things that I suggested was that she use Hydrozyme with calcium with the iron, the F-E-zyme, in order to raise that. And I said, let me know if it doesn't. Well, I haven't heard back from her, so it must have worked. But the other thing is try to separate calcium and iron. This is aside from our digestive, but when I look at the calcium and the iron mentioned that you have here, it's vitally important that they have adequate hydrochloric acid, but it's also you want to try to separate that. Just a clinical aside there, Joe. But let's jump forward now to Chapman reflexes. Chapman was an osteopath that did a great deal of research. They stayed anywhere from 5 to 7 years looking at his memoirs, was how long he would take a look or how long he studied by taking a look at patients who had a confirmed diagnosis, say pneumonia or gastritis, nephritis, whatever, from standard medical diagnostic codes. And then he started finding these reflex points on the body, and he would palpate them, and he found that there was a very high correlation between the tenderness in these points and what was going on with their confirmed medical diagnosis. He later went on to find that when he stimulated these points, that the patients made faster recovery. He found that, what he hypothesized was that maybe it had something to drainage from the diseased organ. We know that when an organ is swollen, just like when a knee is injured or some other body part is under assault or diseased, it's going to swell. Well, what Dr. Chapman hypothesized was that by rubbing these points, he was opening up the lymphatic drainage. And Dr. Goodhart went on to talk about these as neural lymphatic points, and indeed found that when these points were massaged, they would be tender if there was involvement in that organ, but it also helped to speed up recovery in that organ. And the neat thing of it is that we can use these Chapman reflexes by using neurolingual or sublingual challenges, by picking the supplement that we think might be associated with that organ. These points will actually become less tender and to a point of not being tender at all. So these Chapman reflexes are very valuable and will help in helping to show the patient, because the patients don't care how much you know until they know that you care. And showing how much you care will be shown by, are you willing to help them to understand where the problem is? As Joe said, we have an opportunity here to take our pain patients and help to make them patients that are more interested in their overall health than just getting rid of the pain. Are Chapman reflexes verifiable? Here was a study that was published in the Journal of American Osteopathic Association. They went on to state that Chapman reflex points were highly, they said in the final sentence here, you'll see, results demonstrated a statistically significant relationship. Now, you do not hear those words together in any peer-reviewed medical journal unless there is some real science behind it, between the presence of Chapman reflex points and pneumonia in hospitalized patients. Well, we're going to use these Chapman reflexes to help us gain some insight into what might our patients need, how may we get there, but right now we're going to focus on the digestive system. Here's a chart showing some of the different Chapman reflexes that have been mapped out through the body. There's other muscle testing strategies that have all played upon these Chapman reflexes, whether it's AK, whether it's NRA, CRT, CRA. They all basically are going to branch off the work that Dr. Chapman did many years ago. Now, the nutrient testing or the neurolingual challenge, Dr. Wally Schmidt does a phenomenal job of explaining the neurology of this, but these are hardwired. The gustatory olfactory nerves are hardwired into the central nervous system so that when we put this substance into the mouth, what's going to happen is we're actually going to be able to take these points and see them diminish in their tenderness. I like to have the patient push on this point because they're always going to say, well, you just push harder, doc. And it's kind of fun to have them use their own pressure and then test the supplement because now they know that you got something here that works. And then you have them rinse that taste out and retest it and the pain's back. Wow, they're looking at you and now you have just gained a whole new level of respect in the eyes of your patient because you're not just by guessing. And by golly, you can do this, and as long as you give it several minutes in between challenges, it will come and go. And after twice, I'll tell you what, even the greatest skeptic is going to be putty in your hands. They're going to be able and open to listen to what recommendations you might have.
There are some, when we talk about neurolingual taste testing, there are some reflexes that definitely do respond to neurolingual taste challenges and some that don't. So here's a slide that reflects those, and you can print this up and save it for future references. I know that when I first started doing this work, I started using some of the hydrochloric acid points and the enzyme points, and I'm having them taste all kinds of supplements and pushing, and they're like, no, I don't feel any different. And I realized later on when I went over my notes that I was pushing things that weren't supposed to respond. So What do respond are all the Chapman reflexes. There'll be a liver point that we'll talk about in just a moment. There'll be the Bennett's reflexes for the small intestine, and then actually palpation of the large intestine, and we'll palpate that for tenderness and then taste different nutrients. And that was my first experience. There was one physician who had a tender colon, and we had him taste some of the supplements. And when he tasted, I believe it was Colon Plus, he was his eyes got so big because all of a sudden the extreme pain that was in his colon was gone, and he was dramatically changed from that point on. But there are some things that do not respond, and that's there's a hydrochloric acid and a pancreatic point that we'll talk about in just a minute. Murphy sign is something we use for acute gallbladder. That's not going to respond. Tenderness in the web of the right hand for more of a chronic gallbladder, will not respond to that, and then we'll see right thenar pad weakness for pancreatic enzymes, need for pancreatic enzymes, that generally will not respond either. However, having said that, sometimes they do. Sometimes patients are so sensitive that they will respond, and one of the reasons why they respond is because as a patient tastes the supplements, there's muscles that are associated with guarding that area, especially with the neurolymphatic area. And when they taste the supplements, those muscles relax, and then that tenderness or that guardedness goes away. So even some of the things that I say do not respond, sometimes they will for some clients. So we don't want to say you shouldn't use those, but for time reasons, we generally stick with the ones that do respond. Why don't you start off with digestion, Dr. Peterson?
I will. And Joel, one thing I want to make sure we understand is these are not laser points. Chapman reflexes are about the size of a quarter to a silver dollar. I use three fingers when I palpate. I'll use my middle, ring, and small finger in my right hand just because after years of palpation, I feel the most comfortable with that. So when we go over these points, again, you know, don't worry. You got to get in and start doing it. In order to recognize an abnormal, you have to know what normal looks like. And the only way you're going to do that is by getting in and starting to do that. So use these points, use these charts, print them off, and start doing it. But remember, the main concept, think north to south. So if you got a problem lower, start at the top. I cannot reiterate enough how important it is to chew that food. Remember, chew their liquids, drink their solids. I can't tell you how many times I've had a spouse say, you don't chew your food. You swallow it whole. Well, you know, we start the whole digestive process off on the wrong foot with that. So we start with the mouth, then we come with the stomach acid. We've got the pancreas adding various enzymes such as lipase and amylase. We have the liver and the gallbladder which is going to help to store these enzymes, the liver. They're all going to play a huge role in digestion. But you have to make sure, you have to make sure that the digestive tract is healthy before you proceed, because remember, this is where the digestion, the assimilation, and the elimination are going to occur. And if the digestive tract is not healthy, free of inflammation, or healthy amounts of the good bacteria and rid of the bad bacteria, you're not going to have a healthy digestive system. It's just not going to happen. Joe and I have both tried to shortcut and come up with the greatest of clinical protocols, only to go, huh, really?
It's true. So let's look at just an overview of what happens as we go through the digestive system. The salivary and the parotid glands, the pH is 7.2 to 7.4. This is the initiation of digestion, particularly the polysaccharides, but there's also a feedback loop that takes place in the hypothalamus. The hypothalamus then sends messages down to the gallbladder, to the stomach, telling the body what's coming down. So again, the chewing is so important. In the stomach, as I mentioned earlier, the pH is 1.5 to 3, and this provides some of the mechanical breakdown, particularly protein digestion. But this low pH in the chyme is also going to turn on, as I mentioned earlier, the cholecystokinin, which will help turn on gallbladder release, and secretin, which will help for the pancreatic enzymes. The liver gallbladder, the pH is 7.8. The focus of the liver gallbladder is to neutralize fat, to emulsify fat. Remember also that one of the major roles of bile is to excrete the toxins and the poisons out of the body. The liver is the kind of the recycler of the body, and kind of cleans up quite a few things like a filter, and so it has to get rid of, detoxify, it has to get rid of some of the poisons that are in our foods, and it'll excrete that through bile, and that bile should flow freely, but when it gets too congested and too thick, then we can't get rid of some of the poisons, so it's important that we have healthy bile flow. Small intestine, pH should be about 7, that's where we break down finish breaking down carbohydrates, finish the breakdown of the protein, and we absorb our food. And then large intestine, the normal pH of fecal material is 6.8. Here's where we reabsorb water and that we process, hold, and eliminate waste. We manufacture a lot of our B vitamins. B12, biotin, and vitamin K are all manufactured in the large intestine.
Well, let's start by figuring out how do we figure this out. Now there are two points. We're going to talk about the HCL point here. They're Ritter points. Now, as Joe mentioned, these do not necessarily respond to the neurolingual challenge, but they're still very valuable points. What you're going to do is you're going to have the patient supine or on their spine, and you're going to find the xiphoid, which is the bottom of the breastbone. So be careful as you palpate this, men on your women, patients. But you start down by the umbilicus and work up. And what you'll do is you'll work up towards the xiphoid. You're going to go 1 inch below that, or 1 human inch, which is about the width of their thumb, or what would be between the second and third phalangeal joint on their fingers. So that's 1 human inch. And what you're going to do is you're going to find the xiphoid. You're going to go 1 inch, human inch below that. You're going to go over to the left edge of the rib cage, right along the costal chondral borders there, and you'll find a tenderness just right down from there. That's indicative of needing stomach acid. Now, the Chapman reflex is found by going to the sixth intercostal space from the mid-mammillary line to the sternum to the left. What all that means is find the nipple line, and what you're going to do is you're going to find the sixth intercostal space, which is actually going to be right at the bottom of the pectoralis muscle. This is where a woman's bra is going to come in, so you can palpate up and you'll find it. And again, remember, it's a pretty good-sized point, so don't be afraid of finding it. It'll be below a woman's bra, so she does not need to disrobe in your office, and it makes it a lot more comfortable for the patient to be able to stay like this. But you'll find that point to be very tender, and this point will challenge whether they've got too much stomach acid, too little stomach acid. Some of the products that we're going to challenge, if we suspect that they have a decrease in hydrochloric acid, my go-to is Hydrazyme. Now, when I dose, and Joe and I differ a little bit here in the ones that we use, I start at four midway between the meal. It's important that you do digestive enzymes partway between the meal. I'm going to start with four. I'm going to tell them, I want you to keep increasing by one per meal until you feel a warm sensation. Well, they kind of give me that puppy dog look where they kind of look at me and they twist their head to the right or the left like, what do you mean, Doc? I said, you'll know. And they do, and it will be a little bit warm. It won't burn them, but it'll be warm, and then I tell them to back down by one. And this is like priming the pump. As we get this going, as we get the gastrin and the secretin flowing, we're going to get the need for hydrochloric acid going. Now, we're not going to talk about the gallbladder today, but I've had people ask me, well, don't we have to worry about if we're giving digestive enzymes from the outside, in other words, exogenous sources, that the body will stop making its own? No. It has been my clinical experience and what I have heard from the experts with hydrochloric acid, they will not develop a dependent upon the outside sources. So this is not something you need to worry about. When we do talk about liver and gallbladder, we'll talk about that issue at that time of using bile salts and things like that. But I like Hydrazyme. HCl plus, betaine plus, HP are great. They all are going to have betaine in them, which is going to convert to hydrochloric acid. Hydrazyme has a little pancreatin in it, so it's my go-to, and I'll start with that. If they need more than 5 Hydrazyme, I'll go to 1 betaine plus HP, high potency plus HP. And so I find that I can cut down a number of pills and help to stay out of their pocketbook a little bit. Gastrozyme is going to be something that you're going to use with burning or inflammation within the digestive tract, a phenomenal product. If it's esophageal irritation, I will have patients suck on it for 10, 15 seconds, and it does not have an unpleasant taste. Gastrozyme is made from cabbage juice, which used to be called vitamin U, still could be, just not in use anymore. But cabbage juice has a phenomenal, it comes from the cabbage heart, has a phenomenal healing capacity for the digestive tract. Chloral caps are a phenomenal product to help heal the digestive tract. Bromelain plus CLA, think of this as your vegetarian source for a digestive enzyme. It's derived from pineapple. That's where bromelain's going to come from. CLA is going to stand for catalase, lipase, and amylase. So it's going to give you your digestive enzymes as well, because most of our digestive enzymes are going to have porcine origins, and some people are going to be against that. Bio-HPF is for H. pylori. This is a phenomenal product, and I know, Joe, I'm going to let you say a few words about that because you were telling me the other day about HPF and stomach issues.
Yeah, this is one of my favorite products, Bio-HPF, and again, it stands for H. pylori factor. And Dr. Gary Lesneski developed this product. Our go-to product used to be Gastrozyme for stomach issues, but we found that everybody wasn't getting better, and that was before we really knew the relevance of how important H. pylori was for stomach ulcers. And so he put some bentonite, which is an antibacterial clay. He put some antibacterial herbs. Also some herbs to help the healthy mucus lining secretion, so that to support the lining of the stomach, and some anti-inflammatory properties as herbs as well. And so this, what my experience is either Gastrozyme or Bio-HPF just really takes the fire out. Sometimes we'll use both for extreme cases, but usually if one doesn't work, the other one will cool them down immediately, sometimes within the hour. So it makes a huge, huge difference. So that's a very interesting product to test. I'll talk about the small intestine for a second. By the way, and before we go too much farther with this, what you're going to find when you do this testing is sometimes it's going to make patients' tenderness worse. So back to our earlier example, if we were using, for example, if we had them taste HCL plus or Hydrozyme and it made their stomach worse, made those Chapman reflexes worse, we think, there is too much hydrochloric acid. Let's try Gastrozyme or Bio-HPF. So you will notice that patients will say it sometimes that the whatever you're having them taste makes it worse. And I always kid the patients and say, well, I'm glad we're doing this testing, aren't you? Because that's one of my favorite products, and I would have hated to have sold you a product that was based on my clinical judgment that wasn't unique to your system. So it does take a little bit of time to do this testing. I suggest doing the exam first and then scheduling a second visit, a nutritional visit, to go through it and find out the exact nutrients that they might need on your off hours that are not your peak adjusting hours. As Dr. Peterson said, they lay on their back for these tests, bend their knees slightly, and the stomach, he described the stomach. Let me describe the small intestine. So the Bennett reflexes, you create an imaginary circle 2 to 3 inches around the umbilicus and break it into four quadrants and palpate. And what you palpate each quadrant each individually, and you're looking for resistance or a tenderness or a pain that they might experience. And what I do is I have a piece of paper and I just make that circle and break it into quadrants, and I'll number, and what I'm looking for is the thing that has the most pain, the most tenderness, and then I'll have them taste the taste on the quadrant that has the most tenderness. On the Chapman reflex, it's the 8th, 9th, and 10th intercostal space right near the tip. So you can see these down here, 8th, 9th, and 10th, and just palpate right around that area, and you can see, you'll notice on both sides, you'll see some tenderness there. What you'll want to do is as you test the different things, use Gastrozyme. Now, a minute ago I said Gastrozyme was for the stomach. Well, that's true, but Gastrozyme is really designed to kind of put out the fire. And so some of the tissue is the same in the stomach and in the esophagus and in the small intestine. So you'll find that product can be very cooling for a very hot system. IPS stands for intestinal permeability support. And in there you'll find lamb intestine, and you'll find glutamine and inulin and a variety of different things that are designed by Dr. Gary Lesneski to put out the fire and for rehealing, for rebuilding, regeneration. Chlorophyll is a wonderful, wonderful healing tool, and so we want to make sure that we have adequate amounts of chlorophyll, and that could come from green leafy vegetables or chlorocaps per se. Caprin is an interesting product. It comes from caprylic acid. And Dr. Peterson, you've had a lot of experience with this. He always kids me that he does a lot of comprehensive stool digestive analysis, and the thing that almost always comes up is, in terms of killing the bacteria, is Caprin. And so he'll use that in combination with other products. ADP stands for anti-dysbiosis product. It comes from emulsified oregano oil, and that's a very successful product on a number of different conditions. It works with some bacteria, many types of bacteria. It also works with many parasites and quite a few different types of amoebas. Dysbiocide, also developed by Dr. Gary Lesneski, more for small worms, but also for all kinds of small, for crazy bacteria. FC-Cidal is designed for yeast, but a lot of these herbs, we forget sometimes that some of these herbs, we think of, for example, FC-Cidal was created for yeast. However, when these herbs come from plants, the plants have these herbs, have these phytochemical properties to not only fight off the fungus and the yeast, but also the bacteria that might be coming up and destroying their root system. So they have multiple properties, which is wonderful. Then berberine hydrochloride. Berberine is very effective as a natural antibacterial product. So again, here are the Chapman reflexes right on the sides, on both sides, on by the tip. Dr. Peterson?
And the large intestine. Now, make sure you palpate the large intestine. But what's interesting about the large intestine, if you take a look at the Chapman reflex, now if we were to cut the transverse colon right there at the top, right in the center, right there, right where the pointer is, if we were to cut or slice the bowel right there and take that and take the ascending bowel and put it on the right side of the knee and take it down to the knee, and if we were to take the sigmoid colon right at the beginning of the large intestine and put that in the greater trochanter, you can map on the iliotibial band where you might find some problem within the large intestine. So again, you slice it at the transverse colon, you take the cecal portion of the colon and put that over the greater trochanter, and as you palpate up from the knee towards the greater trochanter, where you find that tenderness on the right side, you will find in the ascending colon and the beginning of the transverse colon. And if you do it on the opposite side, and here we can see where the iliotibial band is, and that actually will extend further than that. It'll go all the way through the course of that. There is another Chapman in the middle of it called the prostate uterus one. We're not concerned with that right now, but you can use the whole iliotibial band. And the question for our chiropractic and manual adjusters is, well, how do I know if it's musculoskeletal, if it's iliotibial band? I'll tell you what, you will be amazed, because so many people do have bowel issues that if you start to fix what's going on in the bowel, because so many are, that you will help to take care of the problem. Now, is the original problem coming from the spine down, or is it coming from the inside towards the spine and reflected in the muscle? It matters not at this point. We want to do what's best for the patient, and if you'll palpate that and then challenge it with the appropriate product, you'll find that you'll correct it. And it's going to be many of the same products that we use for the small intestine that will also work on the large intestine. And as an aside to the ADP, ADP is also a great antifungal, but if you start using four of those at a time, you'll find that you will really help to clean up the bowel. And it has a phenomenal product. But one of the things I like to use ADP with also is that if there's upper respiratory congestion, I just want to talk about this product because it is a phenomenal product. And I have a naturopath as a client who will actually have patients suck on ADP, and I thought, that's a little bit strong for me. But she says it helps with sore throats, with nasal congestion. It will really open it up. But I use it a lot of times because of the effect it'll have upon the lungs. It'll have a very positive effect upon the lungs. And with that, Joe, would you explain the difference between cleaning and restoring?
Sure. What we want to try to do, whenever we're working with the large intestine, sometimes we have to clean out the gut. We have to clean it, kill all the bacteria, and really just kind of start from scratch. And so the different products, ADP, Caprin, Chlorocaps, Dispiocide, garlic, FC-cytal, hydrochloric acid products, those are all going to help get rid of the proper pH, or actually in the case of the bile will change the pH, and so the bacteria and some of those things can't live, those bad bacteria, those fungus can't live in the healthy pH where it's supposed to be. Just kind of as a side note, as you were talking, it reminded me. I remember I was at an AK seminar, and one of the doctors pulled me off to the side, and he was saying how he just had an amazing case. A patient was scheduled for spinal surgery. Their back was so bad, and he had put them on a gut cleaning program to clean out the gut and get rid of some of the the pathogens. And lo and behold, by getting rid of the pathogens, he was able to reduce the inflammation. See, so many people don't realize that there are cytokines that are inside the bowel. Cytokines are chemical messengers, and because of these bacteria, they give off the kind of the covering or the coat of these bacteria are things called lipopolysaccharides. And lipopolysaccharides, when they get through the villi of the small intestine, or when they're exposed to the large intestine, as they start to break down, they'll create cytokines, and cytokines will cause inflammation. So what this practitioner was able to do, which was the first time I'd really heard about it, was he treated the bowel to affect the spine, and it had dramatic results. And this patient had gone on and had been able to avoid the back surgery, and has just done wonderful by cleaning the gut. But we want to clean the gut, but we also want to restore the gut. So some of the things we can use to restore the gut are Biodophilus FOS, and Biodophilus FOS is a healthy lactobacillus. It's also the bifidal factors. FOS stands for fructooligosaccharides. That's a prebiotic, so it's food for the healthy bacteria. If we know a patient has histolytica, we probably wouldn't give FOS, because there's been some indications that FOS could contribute to the growth of histolytica. So we wouldn't intentionally use FOS if we knew that they had it. But in that case, we might use Biodof 7 Plus. Well, you might say, Joe, how do I know? Here we come back to the testing. By finding the tenderness in the colon and have them taste the different supplements, you can see what will take the tenderness away. Sometimes it's going to be, as I said, a gut cleaning, like an ADP or a dysbiocide or a garlic or an FC-cidal. Sometimes it could be a hydrochloric acid product. And sometimes it could be a restoring product, like Colon Plus is designed very specifically to heal the gut as opposed to kill any weird bacteria. IAG stands for arabinogalactans, and it will help increase the secretory IgA, as well as if you use IAG and Biodof 7 Plus, we've been able to raise secretory IgA. ImmunoGG is the immunomodular factors that can be very valuable for the gut. Saccharomyces boulardii is a yeast that grows very quickly and takes up space and takes up geography, so that the body can't create candida when people are on antibiotics. So we never really know exactly what we need until we test. And so that's the beauty of this kind of testing, using the body as the biofeedback mechanism. And sometimes it's one, or sometimes it's two, or even three. What I'll do when I do the testing is let's say the hydrochloric acid, let's say their stomach is, this has happened to me many, many times, the tenderness, I'll find a really hot section in the bowel, might be an 8. I'll have them taste the hydrochloric acid product, and maybe it'll go down to a 5. So I'll have them stop that, and then I'll have them taste ADP or chlorocaps, and I'll see if I can get it to go from, see if I can get it go from an 8 to a 5 or a 4 or 5 again, and then I'll have them taste the hydrochloric acid. I never keep the hydrochloric acid in their mouth very long. It's just a short period of time. But I might have them taste hydrochloric acid, HCl plus, or and as well as ADP and caprin. So I might test 2, 3, even 4 things together at the same time until I get it to go down to 1 or 2. Now, after the person has tasted 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 different products, and it goes from an 8 to a 4, guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to let that colon rest. I'm going to give them the products that work best. I'm going to have them take that product for 2 weeks, and I'm going to have them come back following the diet and following the suggestions we talked about earlier about chewing their food, not eating under stress, drinking lots of water between their meals, chiropractic care, exercise, and you'd be surprised, even though you don't get the full restorative factor from making the pain go all the way, you still have on the best product that's good for their particular bodies. Let's go on to liver gallbladder.
Joe, I'd like to jump in there for just a minute, because you brought up about using a number of different products, and Those who don't know me might say I'm cheap. Those who do know that I'm a good steward. And so I realize for some practitioners, thinking about having 8-10 bottles open for this patient and opening up for other testing that we will talk about down the road, you know, they could end up with a gazillion bottles opened up in their clinic. What I do is when I have a good best guess based upon my examination and symptom review and symptomology, I'm going to open up the bottle that I suspect they're going to need, and I let them see me open it. I tell them I'm going to sell them that bottle just so I don't have to have open supplement everywhere. We do have test kits that are available. These are certainly available. You can call Metabolic Management and get more information on that. But I like to use the product that, you know, I'm pretty sure I'm going to be using on the patient, and darn it, I might have to open up a bottle that after years of experience, and it'll only take weeks or months, and I think you would agree, Joe, that, you know, after you really start working with patients on this, you're going to get a pretty good idea of what works. And in order to help prevent that, having a bunch of bottles open, go get the bottles that you suspect that they might need, or use your test kit and take advantage of you know, using your Dr. Free account, because keeping a large inventory in this day and age can get to be very difficult. And I know when we talk about, you know, all these different products, you might be thinking, well, I can't do that, I can't do that. You can, and you can help to keep it to a minimum. You really can.
That's very true. But I will contradict you in a way that I'm always surprised what patients need.
True.
I mean, sometimes my best guesses are like completely off, and so that's why I do like to take advantage of test kits, because especially when it comes to adrenal, some of my favorite adrenal products don't test, and then I have to go on to the next step. But that's the source of another webinar, so we'll talk about that.
That's right.
Let's talk about liver gallbladder, Murphy sign. All of us know how to do that, where you bend your knees and you go palm side down with your fingertips up under the gallbladder. You'll see that for more of an acute situation. If you take the right thumb web, that's more of a chronic situation. You'll start to feel nodules, or it might just feel tender. You should be able to take that right thumb web and really just get in there and work it, and it shouldn't cause any problems. But if people have tenderness there, that's an indication of a chronic gallbladder issue. Chapman reflex, 6th intercostal space on the right side only, and that would be right there. So again, mid-mammillary line, and that would be right there. So you'll be able to look at these charts and use them appropriately. Here's another point that's really, because the Chapman reflex is gallbladder, liver combined, so you don't know which one it's going to be. This is a liver point. It's on the third rib. It's 3 inches to the right of the sternum at the costochondral junction, and you press anterior to posteriorly. And the beauty of this particular point is that it will respond to neurolingual testing. So that's going to be up there. So here's some of the products we would use: beta TCP, that's organic beets, as well as taurine, vitamin C, and pancreatic enzymes. Beta Plus is organic beets and ox bile. We use this mostly for people that don't have a gallbladder, or if people have clay-colored stools, we would use a couple bottles of Beta Plus just to get things moving properly. Cytozyme LV is a neonatal liver. Livitrid Plus is an Ayurvedic formula, plus silymarin. It's a very strong antioxidant, and this is very effective for viruses. MCS2 is going to be more effective for chemicals, although it stands for metabolic clearing support. It's for phase 2 liver detoxification. And as you know, that occurs not only in the liver, but in other areas in the intestines as well. Phosphatidylcholine helps thin the bile, and superphosphazyme. Now, again, you find somebody that's got a liver gallbladder tenderness, how do you know which one to use? We all have our favorites that we use. But that's the beauty of the neurolingual taste testing. So patients are more committed. It takes longer to do this kind of testing, but patients are more committed to it as well.
And just as a real quick add, if you're going to use Livitrit Plus, make sure you put them on beta TCP or beta plus, because Livitrit is so highly effective. I have seen liver enzymes way up there. We're talking way upper hundreds, and be able to get them back down to normal in a relatively quick period of time. But if the gallbladder is congested, if they have one, you want to use beta-TCP to help thin that bile, to help increase the viscosity. And if they don't have one, use the beta plus to help get rid of those toxins, because with Livotrip, your liver is going to start dumping them. It's a highly effective herbal product. I love that product. I use it with a lot of liver issues. Well, with that, let's take a look at the pancreas, because the pancreas is both an exocrine and an endocrine gland. Endocrine is ductless. It produces glucagon and insulin. But we're more interested at this point in the exocrine portion, where the amylase and lipase are going to come from. And so the enzyme point, as I mentioned earlier, the stomach point is to the left. One sun below the xiphoid, the pancreatic point is going to be to the right. And why? You know, you think, well, the pancreas is on the left. No, the pancreas actually is going to cover right along the transverse colon. It covers a big area, but the sphincter of Oddi, or where the pancreas is going to put its enzymes, is going to be on the right side, where you've got the liver and gallbladder at the sphincter of Oddi. So I always remember that when I was trying to remember if it's right for enzymes or left for stomach and hydrochloric acid. So the pancreas is going to be to the right. Now the Chapman reflex is going to be to the left. The okay. Ritter reflex, or the one that's one sun below. So, yep, you caught
right
me, Joe.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm talking about the Ritter reflex. That's going to be to the right.
I'm confused. I was going to call it to your attention. I'm glad you brought that up.
Well, that's why I said it's one sun below the xiphoid, because it can get confusing. So the pancreas for the Ritter reflex is going to be to the right side. So what if the Ritter reflex is, you know, sore for both the left and the right? Go with the stomach. Remember that north to south principle. Now the Chapman reflex is going to be right below the stomach Chapman reflex on the left side. That's why I was hoping to make it clear, and Joe, I obviously got it, you know, I think I said it right, but it gets confusing when you're looking at the Ritter and you're looking at the Chapman.
You said it right. I was just thinking Chapman and looking under left, but you actually said it correctly.
So. Right, and so the Chapman is going to be to the left. It's going to be in the bottom intercostal space. Remember that the last rib that's going to come up there is going to be the eighth rib that's going to join the sternum there. So you go to the bottom intercostal space, and that's where you will find the Chapman reflex, and it's on the left only. The one above that's going to be the stomach when we're looking for the Chapman reflex there, and on the right, liver gallbladder, just to kind of help clear up these points, because we've been talking a lot of points. We've been talking for a while here. The other thing that we're going to see, go ahead, Joe, you had a...
So here's the intestines. The stomach is right above it. Okay, and there's the pancreas.
Pancreas right in between, so sort of the bottom... You know, if you go to the bottom intercostal space, it's going to go in. The other thing is the right thenar pad, not the web. In the web, you're going to be able to find little grains of sand. If there's a liver gallbladder issue, those will not respond. We're talking pancreas now, and this is going to be the right thenar pad, and that's going to be tender. So right in the meat of the thumb, that will be tender if there is a pancreatic issue. My go-to product, Bio6 Plus. It's going to have pancreatic digestive enzymes in there. So if you're suspicious of a pancreatitis or you know, problems with the pancreas, go right to the Bio6 Plus. You will not find a finer product on the market. Cytozyme Pan. Cytozyme is going to be the neonatal pancreatic organ therapy, help heal the pancreas. Bromelain plus CLA, if we suspect, you know, again, we want more of a vegetarian digestive enzyme, but also enzyme product and intenzyme forte. Just not enough could be said good about this. Not only does it work great for sports injuries and cutting edema, cutting pain, speeding up healing, but it's a phenomenal product also when you're looking for a good all-around digestive enzyme.
Okay, so let's kind of wrap things up. We want to review a little bit, and the next two slides are going to be helpful just to, you could print these up and save them, put them on a sheet so that you can make sure you understand and have all the points for review. So we have our stomach hydrochloric acid point. That's going to be 1 inch below, and 1 inch to 1 inch on the left. Then we have our Chapman reflex, the sixth intercostal space from the mid-mammillary line to the sternum, and we're going to use Hydrozyme and HCl Plus as considerations. Sometimes Gastrozyme is for the healing of the stomach. Small intestine, we want to find that umbilicus, and we want to create an imaginary circle 2 to 3 inches around it, break it into quadrants, and palpate each of those four quadrants. The Chapman reflex, 8th, 9th, and 10th intercostal space near the tip. And here's some of the products, IPS, Capra, and ADP. The large intestine, we're going to palpate around the whole intestine. And when we do this, we want to go both with this and the small intestine. Small intestine, you have to be a little, you can go deep, but go very slow. The large intestine, you can go a little faster, but we can actually palpate pretty deep into this area. But again, we're watching the patient's eyes. We're watching how sensitive they are, and if all of a sudden their eyes get big, even if they say, "Oh, it doesn't hurt," if you see those eyes get big and bug out, you know that's a sign there's a problem. And then the Chapman reflex is along the iliotibial band, as well as we've talked about. Liver gallbladder, the Murphy sign, Chapman's reflex, sixth intercostal space, right only. We want to use the right thumb web. And then the liver point on the third rib, 3 inches to the right of the sternum at the costochondral junction, pressing A to P. And the pancreas point, again, 1 inch down and to the right. The Chapman reflex on the seventh intercostal space, left only. And then the right thenar pad is tender. Let's talk about another type of testing, Dr. Peterson.
Joe, thank you. And this takes it to the next level. If you really want to be able to document to your patient that there's a dysbiosis, that there is some sort of problem within the bowel, the Indican test is a very simple, easy to run test. You do not need to have a license to do it. Anybody can do it. Labs out there, there are several labs that will do them. They're going to charge upwards of $125. I can make available to you the reagents that you can run this for under a quarter with each test. And you know, just get a hold of me through Metabolic Management or Dr. Period Peterson at Metabolic Management if you want more information on this. But what this test does is it's designed to screen for the presence of, you know, the bad bacteria, the harmful bacteria, or dysbiosis, dys being abnormal, biosis, the genome of the bowel. But as we've already discovered by now, dysbiosis is a health-robbing situation in which the healthy bacteria have been decreased in number and the unhealthy, destructive bacteria have gained the upper hand. You know, the thing is, when this imbalance occurs, just trying to take a probiotic isn't going to do it. You're going to need to go in and get rid of it. This test will help you to document to the patient along with the Chapman reflexes. But here is a test that doesn't matter who runs it, what practitioner runs it. As long as we're using the same urine, we're all going to come up with the exact same results. And because of my background in engineering and other, I'm always looking for that test that's going to give me the more bang for my buck. And I also want to make sure that it is done as a good steward. But what we're looking for is we're looking for indole. Indole is produced in a bowel where putrefaction and rancidification. Putrefaction is the improper breakdown of protein, and rancidification is the improper breakdown of fats. That what's going to happen is it's going to allow for the growth of the anaerobic or the bad bacteria. Tryptophan is converted to indole for those who want the physiology behind this. This is going to be picked up in the bloodstream. It's then going to be taken to the liver and kidneys, put back in, and the kidneys are going to excrete it. And what we're going to do is we're going to pick up that indole in the urine. So what we're looking at is we're measuring their level of bowel toxicity via their urine. So what we do is I have the patients bring me a first morning urine specimen. If they have not been in my office and I've sent them home with a cup, we tell them to take a clean glass jar, run it through the dishwasher twice, rinse it with tap water, let it dry, and then rinse it with distilled water, shaking it well, and doing it. I don't want any residuals from the dishwasher. I don't want any residuals from the original food in that jar. Now, we have little plastic urine specimen cups that they get if they come into the office, and I send them home to get it. These are available for just pennies. Henry Schein has them, Scrip has them. You can find these urine cups at any number of different sources. So what we're going to do...
Let me interrupt you just for a second, because I think this is a really key point. So we're finding your indole is going to go through the bowel into the blood, and then you're going to pick it up in the urine. So really what we're talking about is a systemic process. If you can identify it in the urine, it's a systemic process.
Good point, Joe. You know, that obviously, you know, it's having global effects upon the whole body, which you and I have been talking about here, you know, this whole time. So what you're going to suspect, you're looking for bowel toxemia. Candidiasis is going to be one of the big ones, because candidiasis is not always the primary. It is usually an opportunistic organism that's going to take advantage of a weakened bowel flora to begin with. Dysbiosis, or the lack of the good or an overgrowth of the bad. Is it lack of good, or is it too much bad? You know, that it means the same thing. Hypochlorhydria can do this, and anytime you're trying to heal a bowel, it is important that you use digestive enzymes, because once we reach those adult years and even later teenagers and the stressful life we live today, it's important that we give that hydrochloric acid to help with the digestion of the food. So as I mentioned, we're looking at putrefaction and rancidification. Those are things that are going to help raise the level of indole in the body. Now, the way you do this test, and these are solutions that I will make available to you, approximately $120 is what it would cost. You have enough solution to probably do 100 to 200 tests. So when you consider the cost, I charge $17 for this test. The labs that do it the exact same way are charging $100 to $125 for the lab. They're using the Obermeyer's reagent. They're using the chloroform. And so it's very cost effective, and it's very simple to run in your own office. So what you're going to do, you're going to take 5 mils of the patient's urine. You're going to put it into a graduated cylinder or a glass top tube with a screw. You could figure where 5 mils would be in that glass top, and just put a little mark on there. And you'll know right where the 5 mils in, so you don't have to measure each time. You're going to add 5 mils of Obermeyer's reagent, which is hydrochloric acid. Now you're going to mix this 8 times. Now, I learned this from Dr. Howard Loomis 25 years ago, and he always stressed 8 times, not 6, not 10, but 8 times. So I do it in a graduated cylinder, and I pour it back and forth into an empty tube 8 times. So actually, it'd be 4 in each tube. And if you had the glass top with the screw on top, you would just invert it 8 times. So what you're going to do is, because of the reaction of the hydrochloric acid on the urine, it's going to get warm. What you're going to want to do is let it set till it cools, which takes about 5 minutes. So I do this test first, and then I'll run my urine dipstick or the other tests that we'll talk about at some future date while I let this cool down. Then what you're going to do, now it's back into the graduated cylinder, you're going to add 2 mils of chloroform. And again, you're going to mix it 8 times, not 6, not 10, but 8. What this does is it will actually take the indole to the bottom of the tube. So you'll now be able to assess what color is it. It should be clear. It could look kind of gelatinous depending upon the urine, but any hint of blue is an indication of the presence of indole, hence Indican test. So any hint of blue is positive, indicating that it is present. If it's colorless, you're going to record it as a 0. Now, this is a neat way that is not taught elsewhere in how to quantify this. If it's colorless, you put it as a 0. What we're going to do is, if you see that chloroform layer is blue or any shade thereof, you're going to start titrating with potassium chlorate. Potassium chlorate is a clear solution. Now, I automatically add 3 drops to my graduated cylinder, and I will shake that thing, not violently, because it's not going to spill out. You only got 10 mils or in a 50 mil graduated cylinder, so it's not going to splash out very easily. And I will shake that back and forth pretty vigorously. If I get a clearing at 1 to 3 drops, I'm going to call this mild dysbiosis, and perhaps we just need to deal with the hypochlorhydria. Maybe a probiotic to go with that. But if it takes 4 to 7 drops, that's the beauty of using the potassium chlorate here to quantify it. we can now say it's moderate. So you can show the patient that there's progress being made till we get down to zero. So again, now we're going to start to suspect mild to moderate dysbiosis and probable leaky gut, meaning it's quite likely, greater than a 50% chance, but we could be just dealing with the more mild form. But if it takes seven or more drops, yes.
Because and I hate to disagree with you, but it seems to me that if it's going through the bowel into the urine, there's already some leakiness that goes on.
And I would have to agree with you, Joel, but what we're really picking up is we're picking up what's absorbed because of the blood flow through the gut, through the lining of the gut.
Okay, so this
is that's
what
was taught to me, but that makes very good sense to me that yes, I had not thought of it that way. But
it's probably larger molecules are able to get through in the moderate dysbiosis, whereas smaller ones can get through otherwise. I hate to interrupt you, but it's kind of all of a sudden one of those aha moments for me, because I've always enjoyed the indicant test, but I've never really kind of thought it through that you're really measuring things that are you're picking up systemic inflammation when you use this test.
You really are. It's a phenomenal test, and again, when you consider the low cost to you, and it's not a matter of trying to make this a profit center in the clinic. It's just the information gleaned from this test is so valuable for you and the treatment of your patient, because we got 21-day detoxes. We've got how long do we go? Well, till we get a clear indicant.
Right.
Some people just aren't gonna. Their condition is so chronic. Their condition is so bad that it's just going to take longer. And so this test gives us a real way of doing it. And I like your point, Joe, because obviously there has to be some leaky gut there, and I was taught because of the blood vessels up against the gut that it was picking up the end all and then going to the liver and kidney. But you're right. By the time we get to moderate dysbiosis, it's beyond probable. It's quite likely, and when we get to seven, now we're talking significant or the definite presence of leaky gut syndrome. And here you're going to want to look at a CDSA or a CCDA, whatever your lab calls it. There are different labs call it different names. Doctors Data, Meridian Valley are a couple that do a splendid job in comprehensive digestive stool analysis. So the one important thing is if you do order these reagents, make sure that you're doing it in a well-ventilated area. In other words, just Don't do it where you're in a little cubicle and you're holding your face right over it. Trust me, only because I know that that hydrochloric acid will it'll open up your eyes. Make sure that you wear safety glasses and make sure that you wear gloves, because you are dealing with hydrochloric acid. The Obermeyer's reagent is partially hydrochloric acid. Now, what I do is I dump it down the I used to dump it down the toilet bowl. I would flush the toilet, and I would dump it right down the middle just to get rid of it. It's okay to do this. I called the city, so it's not a matter of dumping a hazardous material down the toilet. There's worse things going in there, according to them. But it will etch sinks, and it will etch porcelain. So make sure that the flow is going. In my sink, I will get the water flowing, and I will pour it right down the middle of the drain. Also, do not store the Obermeyer's reagent in a cabinet with metal hinges, or it will corrode the hinges. And I could show you a picture of that, because I've got staff that have put the hydrochloric acid into the cupboard, and it does indeed. I always wondered if it would, and it does. Joe, any other clarification on the Indican test? Because I know you've seen me demonstrate it. Anything I didn't cover, I realize it's kind of hard to do without, actually demonstrating it.
No, I think you did a good job. And I think that kind of leads into our final slide, and that is one of the things that our goal really is to do is to help you. And if you need additional help, whether it's with the Indican test or some of the other things we've talked about, or you want your sales reps to come and teach you some of these points or review them, or even develop a small group with four or five clinicians where we can test each other, that's really our passion, is to help take you to the next level. Because, again, what we want to try to do is convert pain patients to wellness patients. Here's some tools, some resources we have for you that I'm pretty excited about providing. One is Dr. Harry Eidenier's CD, Physiology of Digestive Function with Supplemental Intervention. He goes into great detail on all the things that we've talked with. He goes into a little bit more of the treatment and the use of different supplementation. He'll use specific products and specific doses. Again, I always prefer, whenever I can, to do the functional test to find out exactly which ones, because everybody is different. But he's had years and years of experience using the things that he'll be describing. Step one, diet. I mentioned earlier, how do we get people to eat the right food? Well, the three-step detox diet is really an anti-inflammatory diet. So if you use a step one diet, that will really take you a long way. It's easy to do. And so we've got the basic parameters, then we give you a list of the foods, and we kind of give you some sample menus. So that's really something that would be nice to have all your patients on, but especially if they have digestive issues. We also have a questionnaire to assess digestive symptoms. So people say, well, how many symptoms does it take before we treat? Well, think about what you're asking, because if they have any symptom, that's showing maldigestion. That's showing that there's a physiological malfunction. So it would really depend upon how severe it is. But if people are having gas, burping, bloating, if they're having any of the symptoms, to me that would be an indication that we might want to begin some kind of a treatment. If only the basics like we outlined of chewing food, chiropractic care, drinking enough liquids, eating mindful, even if we start with that first and see if that changes it, and changing the diet for the first 30 days, we can start that. But any questions that are on there should be an indication that something's wrong. And then Dr. Peterson's been kind enough to provide his examination form, and these are all these 2, 3, and 4 are downloadable. You'll have to contact us for the CD, for the Physiology of Digestive Function. But I want to thank you all for your time. It's gone a little longer than we had hoped, but we wanted to cover enough material to make you to really stimulate some interest and stimulate some curiosity, and hopefully learn some clinical pearls along the way. Any parting comments, Dr. Peterson?
Joe, I wish I would have had these tools available to me 27 years ago, because it would have saved a lot of the trying to invent the wheel. But you've done a great job in making these tools available to the clinician, and I'm honored to be a part of it.
Well, I am too, and I repeat that as well, that I wish I would have known about this 30 years ago, because there was a lot of trial and error that went into it. So I hope people will take advantage of the tools. Well, thank you again for your attention. Have a great day.